This is the Kratom Science Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Gallagher, blog and social media writer for KratomScience.com, your source for all things Kratom.
My guest for episode 10 is my mom, Bernice Gallagher. In 1998, mom was diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor and was given 1 to 5 years to live. Along with chemotherapy and radiation, she drank an herbal tea called Essiac. Mom believes this tea helped her to fight the cancer and stay in full remission for 2 decades. Essiac was first used by the Ojibwa people of Canada. A nurse from Bracebridge, Ontario, named Reen Case, learned about the tea in the 1920s from an Ojibwa woman who had recovered from a tumor in her breast. Case later opened a free clinic, began to administer the tea to cancer patients, and noticed remarkable results. Case was harassed in subtle and overt ways by the Canadian medical establishment. Her clinic was shut down by the government in 1942. Further Essiac research never happened, but Case continued to treat patients privately until she died in 1978 at the age of 90. More information about Essiac and its story is available in the description. Neither myself nor anyone who works for Kratom Science is qualified to give medical advice in any way. The content of this podcast is strictly for informational purposes. All right, so we're going to talk about Essiac tea with my mom. And I wanted to tell people that we don't work for an Essiac company. There's no Essiac money coming in to fund this podcast. We're not going to make any money to promote Essiac. And we don't want to tell people that they should quit a different treatment and move to Essiac. Some people that have cancer use Essiac and go to chemo. And that's what you did, right, Mom?
Yes, yes. It was back in 1998, and I was diagnosed with a malignant, inoperable brain tumor. And the doctors, the neurosurgeon had told me I had 1 to 5 years to live, and 1 if the chemotherapy and radiation didn't work, 5 if it did. Well, luckily, it's 22 years later now, and I'm still here, so... And he had told me I had what was called a glioblastoma. And he told me of the 16 patients that he had, I was the only survivor. So evidently I did something more than the chemo and radiation, which I also did. I did everything he told me, except I didn't ask him about the Essiac because... From what I knew, from the information I had, it was an herbal tea, and there was nothing in it that could harm me or cancel out the chemo or radiation. So I thought, but I knew if I asked about it, they would say no, because I'd had a little booklet with the do's and the don'ts when you're on chemo and radiation. And some of them were, I thought, a little strange. You had to watch your diet. You couldn't eat anything that was really rich in iron. And I just didn't agree with that part of it. So I just thought, I know if I ask about Essiac and herbal tea, they're going to say no. You just have to do the chemo and radiation. So I did the chemo and radiation and everything else that my neurosurgeon instructed me to do. And... But I thought, I'm going to take the herbal tea, too, because there's nothing in it that can hurt me. And I read as much as I could find about Essiac. And it is an herbal tea. It was first discovered up in Nova Scotia, Canada, by a registered nurse. Her name was... Reen Case. It looks as though it's R-E-N-E. French-Canadian pronunciation is Reen Case. The way it's written, it looks like it's Renee Casey. And Essiac is her name, her last name, Casey, spelled backwards. So it's E-S-S-I-A-C. And she took care of these dozen or so patients while she was making her rounds one week, one of her patients, one of these terminal patients, who had really gone home to die because there was nowhere, they didn't have too much in nursing care up at that time. This was an old woman in her late 90s, and she was, evidently she was still alive, but Renee Casey asked her, she noticed that one of her breasts, she had a really ugly scar there, and she asked her, how did you get that scar? And she said, well, when she was a young woman, and she was Indian, and we'll have to add the tribe that she was from, she said when she was a young girl, she had a tumor on her breast. So she went to their medicine man, really, and he gave her this formula for Essiac tea and told her to drink it, and she did, and it went away, but that's where the scar was. And here she was, I don't know how old she was. She was young when she found this scar, when she found the tumor.
Yeah.
So she was now in her 90s.
And so this was the Ojibwa tribe. I just looked it up.
Yes.
And he was a medicine man that gave it to... So this lady was in her 90s, the one that introduced it to Reen Case.
Yes, that's right. And so she said, yeah, he gave her this medicine and told her to drink that every day. And she did, and the tumor just shrunk and shrunk and shrunk till finally it was gone, and it just left a scar there. And there she was in her 90s and still healthy.
Yeah.
And talking and alive. And even though she, I guess at some point the cancer must have come back because she was a terminal patient at that point, but it was, you know, it had to be 70-some years after she had been given the formula by the...
And then what's Essiac is a mixture of different herbs and roots.
Yes, it is.
It's burdock.
It's burdock root.
Yeah.
Slippery elm. Indian rhubarb root.
Sheep sorrel.
And sheep sorrel.
Yeah.
It's those ingredients.
I'm cheating because I have it right here on the internet.
Well, good. Yeah. Indian rhubarb root. Sheep sorrel.
And now, these, because I'm looking, yes, and this is a pretty good article about it, because it doesn't say it doesn't help.
Mm-hmm.
It does say there should be more research on it.
Yes.
But it also says
it should.
There's been research on the individual roots. One is promotes blood circulation. Mm-hmm. One, a couple of them are anti-inflammatory. One's antioxidants. So it seems like it could help, but then they said there's other studies that showed that it didn't help, but it was just, you know, one study with a bunch of rats or something.
Right.
And they said it didn't help, but there's other studies showing it could help because it has properties that are like antioxidants and anti-inflammatory that actually do fight cancer.
And it's not even just for cancer. It's for other diseases as well. Because of all the different things that are in it, it can help someone who's diabetic. It can help someone, like I can tell you next, I'll just tell you our personal experience with it, my personal experience.
Yeah.
When I was diagnosed back in 1998 with a malignant inoperable brain tumor, and as I said, they didn't recommend that you took anything except exactly what they were giving me.
Yeah.
So I did. I did everything my neurosurgeon told me, but I also took Essiac. And the end result was the 16 patients he had, I had what was called a astrocytoma, which is, it's in a group called gliomas. That's the group of tumors it's in. They range from like 1 to 4 in deadliness. 1 to 4, I was a number 3. And number 4 is a glioblastoma, which unfortunately our oldest daughter got 3 years after I was diagnosed with mine. She was diagnosed with a glioblastoma, which is the most deadly of the gliomas. And they grow fast and they're deadly. So there's not a lot you can do.
Yeah, Mary was about how many months? That was only like 8 months from the time she was diagnosed.
Ten months, yes. Yeah. She was diagnosed in July and she was gone. No, she was diagnosed in September.
And by next July.
Yeah. Yes, it was 10 months. And hers, by the time they discovered it, and she had gone to her doctor complaining of these horrible headaches. And he said, oh, you're young and you've had three kids in pretty quick succession. So you're probably just stressed and it's a migraine. And he really, and she had told him I had had a brain tumor 3 years before, but he didn't seem to think. At that time, I don't think they had done many studies, even with breast cancer.
Yeah.
Which was the first one they could see it could be hereditary.
Yeah.
And that was breast cancer. And it wasn't until years later that they did, in fact, they did studies on our family to see if we had the same marker in our blood.
Yeah. And I remember I got the package, but I never did it.
Yes. Well, they did a study on our family because we did have several tumors. It was first I had it, then our daughter, oldest daughter, got one 3 years later that was deadly. She survived 10 months. And by the time they found it, like I said, the SEAC didn't have any effect because it was too late.
Yeah.
This tumor had grown, so it was huge by the time they saw it. And they really only did, they took, she had a seizure is how they finally discovered that she had a brain tumor.
Yeah.
She had had a seizure, and she noticed that her peripheral vision when she was driving, since this doctor, she was getting nowhere with her primary doctor, he just thought it was stress and related and all in her head pretty much because she was stressed and had three.
Yeah, they always tell you.
Yeah, well, but her symptoms got worse and she was driving one day and she had no peripheral vision. So then she knew something was really wrong.
Mm.
She went back to the doctor, told him all this, and he still stuck with it's migraines from stress. And by the time she called him up. She got up one morning and was vomiting so bad she just couldn't function. She couldn't, she had a seizure. So she called him and told him, and he said, get into the emergency room right away. Duh. Should have told her that way before, but he didn't. So anyway, I never met him, and I really didn't want to meet him because I wasn't sure how I would react.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't have been good. She was taken by ambulance when she had a seizure, her first seizure. And they took her to the hospital and did a CAT scan, only a CAT scan, and did discover that she had a large mass. And that's all they would say. It's a large mass in her brain. And I had asked them, why don't you do an MRI? That's what they did to me, and they could see my tumor. Oh, well, we don't need to do that. The CAT scan showed us enough. We saw what we needed to, and we don't need to do an MRI. So they didn't. They let her lay in the hospital all weekend until she was pretty much in a coma, and the brain tumor had really taken over. And there was so much pressure on her brain that to save her life, they had to do emergency surgery by Monday. She had lain there since Friday or Saturday, but they had no radiologists on staff over the weekend.
Yeah.
So that was her misfortune because she always seemed to get bad on a Friday or Saturday, and that turned out to be her downfall. So there was no neurosurgeon on call, no radiologist to even read the MRI. But anyway, they diagnosed her with a glioblastoma and really didn't give her a time frame, but they got her, they operated on her in the first hospital she was taken to, which was noted for its heart care, for heart surgery. But evidently, they didn't know much about brain surgery.
Yeah.
But anyway, so she just survived 10 months and had a lot of pain with it because she was on the classic chemo radiation, but they gave her
steroids.
Tons of steroids.
Yeah.
Prednisone, and she swelled up.
Yeah, I remember that.
Like a balloon from the prednisone. But they had to do that because there was so much pressure on her brain that probably was the only thing that had kept her from, dying sooner than she did.
Yeah.
So she was on prednisone, which caused swollen. She blew up like a balloon, and from a 95-pound girl went to probably 100 and some. She gained probably 35 or 40 pounds.
Yeah, she gained it really fast, too.
Yes, just acted on her real quickly. And she still couldn't make sense when you spoke with her, but she had just blown up so fast. She didn't look anything like herself.
Mm-mm.
And so 10 months later, she was gone.
Yep.
And so we didn't get a chance to have her try the ESSIAC because she was so sick. By the time they found the tumor, it was so far gone that I don't think it would have helped her. But she couldn't stand the way it tasted. It's not good tasting. It tastes like mud.
That sounds like another herb that people that are going to listen to this know. It doesn't taste good, but
right, it doesn't helps taste good. But when my sister told me about it, and she always was into herbal cures, and when she told me about it, I thought, well, what the heck?
So how do you know how Annie found out about it? Annie Vaughn?
No, but I can find out.
Because this was like before a lot of people even had the internet to even look it up.
Right. Well, she looked up.
They're thinking about.
Well, she worked in the library. We both did. So I think she.
There must have been a story about Renee Case. It probably just made it down.
Yes. Well, the pharmaceuticals did not want any information getting out on SEAC because it would have been, a threat to them.
Yeah, now that gets into the same thing that we're doing with Kratom. They're trying to ban it all over the place because people are getting off opiates and harder stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And this stuff, anybody can probably grow it in a greenhouse, or if you're in Florida, you could probably grow it there. And they're not going to be able to patent it. So, or if they are able to patent it, it's going to take a long time.
Well,
so now they're trying to ban it.
Reen Case applied for a patent up in Canada, and she had to appear before a panel of doctors, or I'm not sure who would approve all this, these kind of things, but they denied her. They did not let her patent it or get it out. She had up to 10,000 people coming to a clinic. She worked in a clinic after anyway, to get back to what she was originally doing, she was being a visiting nurse, and this old lady in her 90s who had been in a tribe, she had the recipe from her medicine man, pretty much. And Reen Case asked her, "Do you mind if I use this on some of these other patients that I'm caring for? Because they're terminal, and it's mostly cancer." And she thought, if this woman survived all these years taking it and only has the scar left on her breast, and it worked for her, why wouldn't it help? Possibly might help some of the other ones. So the woman said, sure, she would give it to her. So she gave Renee Casey the recipe to make SEAC tea. And she did it on her own, in her own kitchen, on her stove. She had a big pot like a witch's cauldron. And she had that on her stove. And she brewed the SEAC tea, I assume from the dry leaves at that time.
And she gave this to her patients for free.
Yes.
And it said she ran her clinic and
everything.
Bracebridge from 1934 to 1942. So that's about the time period we're talking about. And probably around that time, that was right when they outlawed marijuana in the United States. Mm-hmm. I think maybe like the drug companies were just starting to realize that they can make a lot of money.
And
there was different reasons for outlawing marijuana, but it's kind of the same thing, and they didn't want anything competing with their medicine.
Right, and it was the same thing with SEAC. They didn't want any competition from the pharmaceutical companies did not want to have anyone competing with them, and SEAC would be a threat to that because it was all natural. It was cheap. It didn't cost a lot of money. And people could even grow their own herbs, the burdock root, or they collected them. You know, they could go out into the forest, into the woods, and collect these things on their own.
But, yeah. This is interesting. This is from a documentary in 1978 about Rene Case. It's called The Story of Rene Case and SEAC. And just listen.
It was one Dr. Leonardo from Buffalo who had immediately recognized the potential of Renee's cancer cure to warn her of what was waiting ahead.
Dr. Leonardo, he was a cancer surgeon, and he said, "You think you have a cure for cancer?" I said, "I'm way beyond thinking, I know." Then I had five other doctors in the, examining patients. And he asked if he could go in with them and examine patients, and I told him he could. So then he told me, he said, "You have it, but the medical profession will never let you do this to us."
After a while, a mysterious group of entrepreneurs showed up, offering Renee $1 million for the secret formula. But she flatly refused, as they would not guarantee that her cure would be made available for free to anyone who ever needed it. Rene Case was called before the legislature in 1938 to determine SEAC's legal status.
I was trying to legalize my treatment, and the patients went out and got this petition signed, 55,000 names on it. And I went before the legislature, and I lost out by 3 votes.
Public outcry forced the establishment of a cancer commission to investigate herbal remedies. The greatest majority of Rene's evidence was rejected.
You see, they said the doctors all made mistaken diagnosis. That's why the patients thought they were cured.
She had this big cauldron in her own kitchen, and she brewed this tea, brewed the SEAC into a tea. And it does, the form it is now, it's dried out and powdered until it looks like dry Hershey's cocoa powder.
Yeah, or, that's kind of how kratom is like, too. It's leaves, but it's dried up.
Right. Yeah, these are dried, and then they grind it.
And it's a powder, yeah.
And this is a powder. And the way you make a tea out of it is you add distilled water to it, and then you put it in a pot on the stove, and you let it come to a boil several times and stir between, and then the whole pot gets poured into a container. Glass is the best. For years I used, it was actually a Tupperware container, but you start with, decide to get this, the instructions are in every box that you get. And it was only sold in Nova Scotia, Canada. So when I first started to use it, it was hard to get. because it was a couple. They were just a married couple, and they went into this business for themselves, and they sold the SEAC, and they didn't take much of a profit either. Reen Case did not want to put a patent on it because she didn't want it to get expensive, and she didn't want the pharmaceutical companies to sell it because she knew they would really hike up the price on it. She wanted it to be so it was available to everyday people if they got cancer or any kind of disease, because it can help diabetics. It can help anybody who's just not healthy, low in iron or whatever. So it can do a lot of things. But I'll tell you what it did for our family. As I said, I was diagnosed back in 1998 with an inoperable brain tumor. So I thought, well, what could it hurt? You know, they can't operate on me. Just the type it was, it went deep, and it was like a jellyfish on top of my brain, and the roots went deep inside the brain, tentacles. And if they would have tried to remove them, if they operated on me, it would destroy too much healthy brain tissue and too much damage. So they didn't. They treated me with radiation, chemotherapy, and then besides that, I did take the SEAC, the herbal tea. And I think it helped at least as much as the chemo radiation. I think more, because he did tell me of the 16 patients he had with a anaplastic astrocytoma like I had, I was the only one that survived.
Yeah. And tell him about the SEAC tea?
I didn't, but you know what?
Yeah.
I thought about that many times because he's such a good doctor, and he got really fed up with the pharmaceuticals. I mean, the health insurance companies.
Yeah.
And back then it was UPMC and Allegheny.
He was at Allegheny General.
He was the head of neurosurgery at Allegheny General. Matthew Quigley, and he was like the best. They called him Saint Matthew in the hospital because he saved so many people that had brain tumors by operating or other ways. Now, he couldn't operate on me because mine was just inoperable.
Mm-hmm.
But he did. My oldest sister, who lives up in Erie now, her youngest daughter, she had three daughters, her youngest daughter got a brain tumor about a year or so after Mary did. And she had the same type that I got, an anaplastic astrocytoma. And it was just small when he found it. It was on the front of her forehead and just into her scalp. And it was small. And he said ordinarily he would just keep doing MRIs and keep an eye on it to make sure if it wasn't growing, he would just leave it alone. But he said with our family history, he didn't want to mess around. So he operated on her right away, removed it while it was small, and left a very little scar. Her scar is in her hairline, so you can't even tell that she was ever. But it was so small, she didn't need any radiation or chemo yet, because he got it. He said, I think with your family history, we better just get it out of there quick.
Yeah.
So he did. He operated on her, and like I said, left a very little scar. And he told her, well, within 6 years, it will come back. Dr. Quigley told me that within 6 years, I would get another one, and it would be deadly. And it never happened to me, but I was on the SEAC the whole time, from the diagnosis until he told me that. And I never got another one.
Mm-hmm.
But my niece, Paulette, well, she got one in 6 years because she didn't like the SEAC. She didn't drink it, so within 6 years, exactly what Dr. Quigley told her, she got another astrocytoma. And this one was bigger than her first one. And this one, he couldn't just operate. He operated again removed what he could, but it was much bigger than the first one. So she needed chemo and radiation after the second one. But I never got a second one. It never came back because I was on the SEAC.
So I'm reading the Reen Case thing, and she, it's funny. It's the thing that she wrote, and I'll put a link on our on wherever the podcast goes.
Yes.
But I think part of it was the medical establishment that Art was already doing cancer research didn't want to give her any credit for discovering it, and because she was just a nurse.
Right.
But she keeps talking about all these late-stage people that she treated, including her own mom, who was 72 years old, and she got, like, liver cancer, and she started giving her the SEAC, and the doctor said she only had a couple days to live, and she started giving her the SEAC, and she ended up living to 90.
Several of them lived to be into their 90s and survived the cancers they had. And even the ones that were really, there was no hope for, the SEAC seemed to help them to be more relaxed and more comfortable, and it also kept them regular, which is a major problem when you're under chemo and radiation. It doesn't sound like a big deal.
You get constipated.
You get impacted. It's way beyond constipation because the chemo, that's chemical therapy, and they're pumping all these chemicals into your body. So you get so backed up that you're impacted, and it is so painful. And all you have to do is ask anybody that's had it happen. And really painful. But the SEAC just puts you back. It normalizes you again. It doesn't make you run. It doesn't make... So if you're having problems with anything, with your bowels, it helps you to be normal. So even if you're not on chemo or radiation, if you have problems, it can help that. So it does help when you have, when you're diabetic, it can help you, and it helps your the organs. And of course, we know that it helps with the brain tumors. My niece did survive her the second tumor that came back, but this time she got over the taste of how the SEAC tasted and realized, don't worry what it tastes like, just take it. And she took it, so, but she survived. I mean, she survived because she was on the SEAC and got over that second tumor, so she's fine. She's healthy and, you know, I think, I don't know if she even had kids after that, but she's healthy now. She's now 42 years old and has no reoccurrence of the cancer.
Yep. Does it make you feel any different when you drink it?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
It just tastes like you're drinking muddy tea. doesn't make you feel any different.
Yeah.
So you don't get spacey or anything like that. It has no effect like that as far as being dizzy or any kind of a... It just helped you. It helped you to be regular, and that helped me so much. Because that was one of my biggest problems. I couldn't take any kind of medication. I would get constipated. So the chemo did, and the radiation did.
Mm.
And they also made you sick to your stomach, too, some
of
them. It helped with everything with no side effects. So I just thought, I continued to drink it. I still drink it. But now it even comes in a capsule form where you can take... When you first have cancer and you have active cancer, the recommendation is to drink 2 ounces every 3 or 4 hours, 2 ounces. But I could never remember to take it 3 times a day like that. So I took 6 ounces in the morning and 6 ounces before bedtime. And it worked for me that way. And it worked in our family.
I was going to say, who else do you know? Wasn't there somebody else, like Uncle Danny or somebody?
Yes. Anyone in our family that got cancer, we recommended the SEAC to them. My brother-in-law was diagnosed with prostate cancer. He was in his 60s when he was diagnosed.
He do the SEAC then?
Yes. He started right away on the SEAC. He read what he got information, and he thought, hey, this... And he knew it worked on me. I was still living after a long time after my diagnosis. And so that was good enough for him. And right after he started to take the Essiac, his numbers dropped. His numbers were starting to come up. And after he started on the Essiac, they fell. I mean, drastically fell. And the doctor asked him, you know, what did he do? Because the numbers had fell so quickly and unexpectedly, because when he was there before, they were rising. And that's when he thought, I better, you know, start to take this stuff. And when he did, they dropped right away. And he's been in remission now for, well, at least 10 or 12 years since he had it. He's in remission.
Yeah.
And he's fine. So he was another one. And our younger son's girlfriend worked with a girl who had a benign brain tumor. She couldn't smile anymore. Her face was so distorted, and the whole side of her face was numb. She couldn't feel it. Even though it was benign, it's still deadly in the brain. And it kept getting bigger and bigger, and they grow fast. A benign brain tumor typically grows fast, faster than the...
I thought benign meant it didn't grow.
Benign means it's not cancerous.
Oh.
But it's still a tumor. But it kept getting bigger and bigger, and it was pushing her healthy brain tissue into one little corner of her skull. So her face was paralyzed on one side. She couldn't smile. She was having trouble with her talking. And so she told her about this Essiac that I had taken long ago. And did she want to try it? And so she gave her all the information. And that's what we try to do. We give somebody that if they ask for it, I'll let them know. You know, I'm here after 22 years because I took this tea, and, you know, can't guarantee that's what made my tumor go away, but, you know.
It's not going to hurt.
It can hurt you. Yeah. It's an herb, and it's not going to hurt you. And it never hurt me. And I never had any side effects from it. All I did was end up living now for 22 years with a malignant inoperable brain tumor. Now, this girl's only been on this tea for 2 weeks because our younger son brewed some for her. And so she was taking it into work and giving it to her friend. And after 2 weeks, the numbness in her face started to go away. And that was after 2 weeks. So, of course, she kept drinking it, and after now, it's about 3 weeks, it's totally gone. She's smiling again. She can talk normally. She doesn't have any paralysis in her face anymore, and just with the Essiac, she didn't get any kind of medical treatment on it at all. I don't know why, but she had been going to a doctor, I assume, but they hadn't given her any treatment yet. So just the Essiac tea alone made that tumor shrink enough that her face is normal now and she can smile and talk.
Thanks, Mom. I'll be posting links to information about Essiac tea and Reem Case in the description. Music is by Risey. Song is called Memories of Thailand. Kratom Science Podcast is written and produced by me, Brian Gallagher. For more information on all things Kratom, see KratomScience.com. Take care.